The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held October 21 and 22, 2021, at Waits Lake Open Bible Camp near Valley, Washington.
All right, welcome everybody to this class. I want to start with a verse from James 3:17. It says, "But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy." Can somebody quote for us James 1:5 that we heard this morning? Thank you. So both those verses talk about wisdom. Sometimes when you're evaluating students, you need wisdom. So imagine with me that you are a builder by trade, and you specialize in just building houses, and one day you get a call from a person who has a special building project that he wants you to do. He doesn't say what it is, but he tells you that he's going to send you a blueprint in the mail. He asks for your address and sends you a blueprint in the mail for this special project that he wants to have built. Several days later, you get a package in the mail, and you open it up. You lay out the blueprints and you stare in confusion because in front of you are the blueprints for a nuclear submarine, and you feel a little bit overwhelmed. What would you do in that situation? If you're a builder of houses, you may be a man that has lots of skills in building houses, but when you're faced with this kind of a proposition, you don't know what to do. Your skills do you no good. I'm not a school board member, and I never have been, but I know sometimes for boards it can feel a little bit like that. When you look at all the things that can be shown by a student's performance, you look at it and it's like, what do I need to look at? What do I not need to look at? It can be like looking at the blueprints of a nuclear submarine when you don't know anything about it. So why is it even important for the boards to evaluate students' performance? Isn't that the job of the teachers? What comes to your mind? Why is it important for a board to evaluate how the students are performing? Exactly. It measures if they're learning what you want them to learn. Yes. What else?
Is it somewhat of a measurement of the teacher?
It can be a measurement of the teacher. That's good. To some level, yeah. Good. What else?
Don't the achievement tests, when you evaluate those, will help you to see where there could be weaknesses in your whole system.
It can show weaknesses. Good. What else? If you want to maintain a connection with your school, with the students, and especially with the teachers, and you're on the school board, you will go a long way in that if you know how the students are performing and you know what's happening with the students. Because then when the teachers bring something to you, they know that you will make a knowledgeable decision because you know what's been going on. If we want to produce quality workers in God's kingdom, we must monitor what they're doing. We must monitor their progress. That's the only way we're going to be able to achieve that goal. And if you as a board member or a teacher have a real heart for the school, you just will. If you have a heart for your students, you just will monitor their progress because it matters to you how they're performing and what they're doing. I come at this from a perspective of a teacher, of course, not as a school board member, but I cannot emphasize strongly enough how reassuring it is to know that if you're a teacher, that you have the school board behind you and they will support you and they will give you direction and they will help if you get into a situation that you don't know what to do. It just is a load off the teacher's shoulders. And the way school is set up, we've heard it again and again, but it's a chain, and each chain has links, and the school board is one of those links. And if any link is broken, the chain is ineffective, doesn't work. And if you're a board member, just embrace that. Don't shrink from it, just embrace it. That's part of your calling, part of your job, and it's a vital part. There's another story. You may have heard it before, but a pastor was traveling on a plane, and the plane hit a severe storm. And it was horrible lightning, and the plane was getting tossed around, and there was turbulence, really bad turbulence. And the passengers were scared, of course, but this pastor noticed that there was a little girl curled up in one of the airplane seats, and she just didn't seem to be affected by the storm. She was just reading and just completely calm and relaxed. And once they got through it and got landed, he made a point to go talk to her, and he asked her, "I noticed you weren't scared. Why weren't you scared going through the storm?" And she said, "My dad's the pilot, and he's taking me home." So she wasn't scared. She was completely calm. And that is the kind of feeling that a teacher can get when the board is behind them, and the board is helping, and the board knows, or the teacher knows that the board will be there. Are there any board members here that have served for more than 10 years on the school board? More than five? How many of you are on a school board now? Okay, there's a couple. Okay, good. I want to hear from you. This is part of what I want this class to be, is hearing from your wisdom of what you've experienced through the years. So if you read the topic description, it mentioned four different things that we use as a gauge for how our students are performing. There's the placement tests, the achievement tests, grading procedures, and report cards. But before we go on with that, are there any questions that you have that you would like some input on in relation to this thing of evaluating students and their grades? I did not. So do any of you other teachers would have had the board members always look over the report cards? In our school, at the end of the year, we make a copy of the report card and put it in a file, so if the board members wanted to, they could have gone back through and looked at it. I don't know if they did always. Right. Mm-hmm. You're saying you think that's the way it is?
That's the way that I have experienced.
Right.
I didn't know by what you were saying earlier if you were suggesting that should be, that the board should look at.
Well, I'm not making a statement one way or another on that. I would like to hear some opinions on that. We can talk about that now. Is it important for the board to see the report cards, or should that more be something between the teacher and the students and the parents? Are there any thoughts on that? Right. When there's a problem, it can be a good thing to look at. Go ahead.
I think the way I would have been familiar with board work is that the board would be informed by the teacher to a faculty meeting and a board member on the faculty meeting or somebody like that if they're having an unusual problem with a student.
Right.
And they might ask to see the grades and try to evaluate
right.
what's happening. Come more from the teacher sharing,
right.
the board member saying, "I want to see the report cards."
Right.
As a church school, we kind of fit under a home school category.
I think report cards can be rather sensitive
mm-hmm.
with parents and students,
right.
especially struggling students that maybe are making it, but then the teachers can, or the parents can feel rather exposed that, you know, my two two children, my three children are all struggling in school. Mm-hmm. It creates a level of visibility that I think you'd have to be pretty careful with.
Yeah.
Different schools are going to be different, mm-hmm. what they're used to.
Right.
But if you're not used to looking at the report cards, you'd have to go off it cautiously to say, suddenly, oh, the board wants to see all the report cards.
Right.
But it feels pretty vulnerable to the major body, I think.
And I know there's variety even amongst students. Some students are very protective of their report cards. They don't show it to anybody. And other students, it doesn't really matter to them if people see their grades. That I've seen that in my teaching. Good. I like what has been said. Any other thoughts about that? What place does the board have with report cards and seeing those?
School board members not going to show stress. The information that you get in a situation like that is confidential. That alleviates some of the problems that you're talking about. If the parent doesn't have the confidence that the school board member is going to take that information and use it rightly and not project what kind of business.
That is a good point. The information on the report cards are confidential. The information is confidential. And I would feel, as a teacher, I would have felt comfortable with my board seeing my students' report cards with that understanding that they know that it's personal information and it's not something that the whole church should know about. That's good. More on that. While we're talking about report cards, what's the most important thing that a report card shows? Their progress. Mm-hmm. Good.
Where your student is lacking.
Okay, where they're lacking. Good.
Maybe another important part is what kind of conduct grade. Maybe that's more important than some of the study grades.
Yes. I've heard parents say that so in our report cards, the grades were on this side or on the left-hand side when you're looking at it, and the conduct was over here, and they said, yeah, we look at the conduct first before we even look at the grade level, and that makes sense to me. So it's a good way to measure that. I'll just tell you that part of the report card is harder to fill out than the averaging part. But
I've also heard another parent say that I'm more interested in how they're doing on their Bible grades, Bible memory, grades in Bible classes, than maybe even other academic
students. I see. That's an interesting one.
But I think a lot of teachers, they dread filling that out. I always hated to do that.
Right.
And there's a lot of subjectivity in that. And so you look at it, and some teachers very carefully, pluses and minuses, others just S, which means satisfactory.
Right.
So you don't learn very much.
Right.
And it seems like once there's a precedent set that this is satisfactory and there's a plus for any work, you'll see that in all the marking periods.
Right.
Just kind of follows through.
Right.
So, you know, I would say parents probably need to know that. It's a lot of subjectivity in that side.
Right.
Just because it's a bunch of S's doesn't really mean that.
Right.
It's all really that good necessarily.
And one of my co-teachers, I remember him saying that he was kind of agonizing over whether he should mark something on the conduct side, because he knew that if he did, those parents were going to come to him and say, why did you mark that? Because they were in tune with their student enough to want to know why he actually said that. And that's a testimony to parents that are paying attention. Good. What else about report cards?
Anything on the right side. So, say a student is turning in late work. We're docking 5.
5% for his late work, and then we're marking minus on the right side. Is that appropriate? Should both sides reflect that same thing, or is it important to keep the academic acquirements separate from that? If that's a different subject.
No, that's a good question. Does the conduct side affect the percentage side? Are you asking whether, so if you do mark something negative on their conduct side, are you asking whether that should change what it says on the other side? Or are you more just asking, is there a connection?
In other words, is it okay to minus 5% because they turn to negative?
5% on their report card or just on their daily lesson?
On the lesson.
Right,
side.
Yeah.
Or if they were sloppy the first time through, but the second time through they did a really good job. Really good, so now it shows a good grade instead of a poor grade.
Right.
Or do you just put the good grade down and then put a minus on it?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. And that connects with grading procedures. Go ahead.
I think that's where your school policies are very important. So that there's a consistency from teacher to teacher. And even if the parents have their hands on those policies, that indeed my child has these grades because they had incomplete work.
Right.
That's how the school handles it. Mm-hmm. Other schools have more grace than others, and then maybe it's reflected more on some negatives on the other side.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
The more we can communicate with our parents what grades mean and the policies that affect those grades. Just the better transparency there is in
right.
the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And the more they trust that what's on the report cards is really how it is,
right.
not just the whims that we teachers mm-hmm. sometimes struggle with.
So I would be curious, how many of you, the schools that are represented here, have a written policy on how you grade work? Or is it more left up to the discretion of the teacher? I would recommend highly that if you don't have a policy, you should have one. The biggest thing is what you said, Anthony, that especially for new teachers, that's if a new teacher doesn't have to decide that, like how am I going to grade? How much weight does a quiz have? How much weight does a test have? How much weight does the daily work have? What happens if it's late? All that stuff, if it's a policy ahead of time, it can save the teacher a lot of headache. And it's more consistent, like you said. Go ahead.
Do you guys have approximate, like, percentage-wise, like, standards, like, tests, work, daily work that, you know, like, assignments do?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have a general idea? Like, I was always thinking, like, 50% is a test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of ways to do it. What are some ways that we do that with averaging grades so that we come up with the report card grade?
I was researching that subject this last summer, partly because I was wanting to implement that in our school. And I talked with Jonah and Chris Steinman and Jonathan Erb here, and kind of the general consensus was is some of that depends on the UCLA run stuff, as well as some of the age level. So the lower down the grades you go, maybe the less weight you put on a test, but the higher grades, like 6 through 10, you start to put more weight on it. And they were saying anywhere in grades 6 through 10, they were saying somewhere between 60 to almost 100%.
I see.
Whereas more lowers, maybe between the 20 and 40%. Those are just real rough figures that I got.
I would be used to the test being 50% of the grade. And then the daily work being the other 50%. And if you have quizzes, I gave that the same amount of weight as the daily grades. And then the test, the quizzes were 25%, the daily work was 25%, and the test was 50%. That's how I did it. But we don't have a written policy in our school. Go ahead.
But as a means of survival, I have developed a policy where I don't really pull an actual number of grades off of the daily work. But I'm looking at quizzes, especially like in a math subject.
They may want to. They may want a better education.
I'm letting them. They check their own work. And I'm just as a test as a result of how diligent they were in making sure that they understood that they're high schoolers. And I let them know, hey, this is, you are practicing now. And when you get to that, so far their test grades have been wonderful for the most part. But am I straying too much by slacking off? And
so basically you're saying you just grade the tests.
And
then you—that's what goes on their report card.
And so, like, you know, in grammar, English, I might grab, you know, a certain, you know, book report or research paper, or something big that needs a little more, more of a result of their, their work.
Right, and not all curriculums have quizzes. CLE does, and I remember—I think it was Jonathan said that if you. So some people are just used to a daily grade. They want to see a grade on every single lesson because that makes them feel like they can monitor the progress. But he said that if you do, you can do that with the CLE stuff. And but if you figure up at the end of a book or the light unit, say, figure up an average of their daily grades and look at the test grade and the quiz grades, they're going to be about the same. It's not going to make a huge difference how you grade it because... After all, how well they do their daily work is going to determine how well they do on the test and the quiz. But I never tested that with myself, but that's what he said, and it made sense to me. Good, more thoughts on that.
A lot of this has to do with the culture.
It does. Cultures are different, yes.
Schools are used to the daily work being graded.
Yep.
Others are not used. I do think there's more and more emphasis on less energy into grading papers and letting the tests and quizzes really, and that's what they know.
Right.
And so your daily work is to learn, and your tests and quizzes are to assess if learning is taking place.
Right.
So I think a lot of schools, as I see it, are more and more emphasizing these long hours of correcting papers. This is just to learn.
Right.
It also frees up, one thing we found out in our school is it frees up parents to help their students with work without feeling guilty because it doesn't weigh much anyhow.
Right.
Rather than calling and saying, oh, we help the students, not quite fair. We've made it clear in letters to the parents. Their work is worth no more than 25%. It's not going to carry them into the next grade.
Right.
Help them all you want.
Right.
The test will show how they're learning.
Right.
And so, first way, I think if you can slowly move in that direction without losing your parents and your students, take years to transition,
right.
But at least that the work is never worth more than 25% for middle to upper grades. For second graders, they don't have any tests.
Right.
It really is the daily work that does show.
Right.
So it does shift, as Chris mentioned, as they get older.
Right.
I'd rather see our teachers spending energy into learning their lessons well themselves and how to teach those lessons and less energy into correcting papers every day.
And what you said is making sure the parents know what to expect and what the grades mean is just is huge.
Could we say that consistency is a bigger deal than the
back
than a radical change midterm? In other words, what 84%, what actually does that say?
It takes more.
84%. I think that throughout the school year, if we see 84, 86, 88, 89, that's a good thing. That tells us something.
Right.
But if last year everything was 86, 86, and now this year everything is 89, 89, and that resulted from a change of policy, then
right,
we're not really getting an accurate assessment
right
of what's happening.
And that can, that's why I was saying about the policies, that can happen if you have new teachers coming in and they might be used to grading it differently and they don't really know what to expect and they're scared to ask, and so they just do it kind of the way they think they should, and that can happen. Okay, while we're talking about this, let's talk about achievement tests. How many of you have achievement tests every year at your school? Is that normal? Okay, most of you do. That's good. Why do we do those? Is it just another test? What's the value of achievement tests?
She really wanted the achievement test to see what was going on this year.
Mm-hmm.
And to her, it was an important piece of data.
Mm-hmm.
We were making probably only
how are they progressing with only half of the normal load?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I know the current ones, they've been given the number, but nobody keeps track whether they're responsible.
Or we could ask, why do you do achievement tests at your school? Just because you always have? Do you know how to read them? Do you know what information they give? They look pretty intimidating when you look at the result sheet. It looks pretty intimidating.
You said there are different types of achievement tests that you guys do, or is it all the same California achievement tests?
We do the California achievement tests at our school. Is that standard for everybody that's here? The cat forms? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I think you're right. That is by far, Cat 7 is by far the most common. Troyer Software, I don't know if you're familiar with Troyer Software.
Yeah.
They develop grades, I think, 1 and 2.
Okay.
And so our school has transitioned to that because it aligns itself better with Christian Light, Evangel Rod and staff, etc.
Is he the one that grades the achievement tests? Is it the same Troyer or not? The Alan Troyer, yeah.
I know he wants to provide into the middle grades. I'm
okay.
Not sure what his ultimate goal is. I should know that. I didn't ask him. I think it's really worth checking
mm-hmm.
out our options.
Yeah, I think it makes a difference if your school has 50 people or 50%.
If you don't know what the stuff on there means, I would highly recommend you ask somebody that does, because it can show various things. It can show how well your school system is comparing with other schools that are doing those achievement tests. It gives you just a gauge whether you're kind of on par with everybody else that's doing these achievement tests or whether you're lower or higher. And it can give, there's a score on there that you can look at each year, and if the student has gained at least 50 points on that score, then you can conclude that they're getting what they should have gotten the year before. If they haven't gained anything on that score, it may be something to look at. And they're it's just interesting to me to look at it and see how well the different students do. You can see, like, if they're in sixth grade, it'll show how well they performed, if they performed like a sixth grader or if they performed like a ninth grader, and some of that stuff maybe is somewhat subjective. but it's interesting. And if you know your students, you pretty much can predict what their achievement test will look like and how well they will perform. But another thing that I don't have personal experience with, but it seems like a wise thing to me, is if the states would come to us and ask to see proof of what we're teaching our students, we could pull out the records of our achievement tests and say, this is the results of the tests they've been taking. Another thing I like about them is that the students, that it's not curriculum based, it's just a standardized test that whether the students do Rod and Staff or CLE or Rebecca or Saxon or whatever, they just take the same test and it shows how well they measure on that scale. Anything else about achievement tests that you want to talk about?
One other thing is generally speaking, we have very good curriculum, but depending on your curriculum, I think you could spot that on your... One thing I've noticed, I only noticed it this last year, but a lot of my students, the math section, was almost a consistent... dip across my students, just a dip, and it's probably me, either me or part of the curriculum, one or the other, and it's a way to, especially for the board, to look at that, and you can identify weaknesses, whether it's curriculum or teacher or somewhere in there, maybe look at strengthening that aspect of it.
Just get one quick note. John Troyer, who of course by now has accumulated thousands of grades across many, many schools. And very interesting, he will share with you which curriculums are strong and different. Like you might say, okay. Well, Rod and Staff, English as a whole, those schools score high, or low, or Christian Life high, mm-hmm. etc. That's very fascinating.
That is.
Because it's a large enough pool.
Yeah.
That it is, it's at least indicative as to strengths and weaknesses in different mm-hmm. curriculums mm-hmm. for different publishers.
I see.
So that is available. That's John Direct.
What about placement tests? Have any of you personally used placement tests with students? What is a placement test? Make sure we know what we're talking about here. You're coming from a different school, or if you're coming from maybe a homeschool setting into a school, it gives just a gauge about what the student knows already. Especially if you're coming from a school that has different curriculum, it can be really valuable. Because just because a student has gone through sixth grade in one curriculum, it might not be quite the same as going through sixth grade in a different curriculum, and that can cause stress when they change to a new one. Okay, one other question that I want to ask. And this isn't a fun question really to think about, but how do you decide if a student should be held back and repeat a grade? We're talking about evaluating student performance. If their average is 65% or lower, okay.
I'm not saying more or lower, I'm just saying...
Oh, if it's 65%, yeah, okay.
In other words, if it's less than failing.
Right.
I'm just trying to be obvious.
Right.
Is that overall or individual? Is that the overall average or the individual subject? The information tended to pass through.
And it would have been much healthier if it would have been...
I guess I'm just going to be obvious and say, oh, there are half the subjects were...
good.
But it is tough.
It's a very real question that teachers and boards face. What was that? Parents disagree. Then what? Right.
Comes back to policies.
Mm-hmm.
Once a student isn't focused, there's a lot of emotion surrounding it, it's a tough time to make judgment calls. What policies can be in place? Pass fail lines, major versus minor subjects. What grade they're in.
Yeah.
We don't want to make it over complex, but sometimes we fail to think through it until we have a situation.
Right.
And then it becomes very personal.
Right.
It causes a lot of hurts.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
Yes, exactly. When does this class end? 250 or 240? 250? Okay. Okay. Right.
It wasn't very, but is it fair to a student to pass them on when they're, you know, they're like 1% above a failing grade? Like if they're struggling, how is it fair to just keep pushing them on and let them struggle? Or is it, at what point do you say, I mean, they'd have more, there'd be fewer tears? They just stay back and did it again.
Students need to be loved with their individual uniqueness, not just because we're trying to convert them.
That was a little question.
We need to keep a proper
how much other stuff.
This one's improved the motivation of the students. I don't know.
We heard about students that there's dynamics we heard about students that serious home issues that you see on their face in the morning when they walk in, whether they're dad and mom fighting. And we've had that years ago. I was on school board once and we passed a group.
Now, obviously,
and my opinion should have been kept back. And the school gave that group. And I always felt like we didn't do that girl.
You make a statement and everyone else
we're not fair to her because she struggled with that all through school. But she grew up that way. She has children. She's living her life.
And you kind of have to back off.
But how much, I mean, what we're talking about here is evaluating data to know where to go from here. And how much do we let that affect us in our decisions? The other things, what is the best thing for the child?
It's that the more you bring in, the more the influence grows. And I believe
it's so true that there's so many other things that affect the student besides just what happens at school. And we have to make decisions about that. And those are hard decisions to make. One thing that I've thought of in being in school is that, and I'm sure this depends on where you are too, but holding a student back has just a bad connotation. Just like the student, they failed. we failed. And I do not like that word in school, for one thing, because even if you have to repeat a grade, you didn't fail. You just are trying again so that you can do better. But it's hard to get a student to understand that. But another thing to keep in mind is that a first grader repeating first grade is going to relate to it differently than a ninth grader repeating ninth grade, just because in ninth grade there's so many other social surrounding things that it could embarrass them so much that it does more damage than good. It's possible for that to happen. And I know that doesn't give any answers really to how to do it or when to do it, but it's reality that you face. And the last most important thing I can say is that in evaluating those things and trying to figure out what other things factor in, whether you just look at the grades or you think about other stuff, you just pray lots, and God will give wisdom, as we read at the beginning. Thank you so much for your help, and God bless you all. You're dismissed.